The venue, Stade Auguste Bonal, home of Sochaux Montbéliard. The date, 17th of May 2008. The hero, a Ligue 1 journeyman who would fittingly leave for Qatar. This is Le Classique, and we're asking, is Amara Diané the most important player in PSG history? Hello, everyone. This is Tom. I'm host of Le Classique, and I'm joined with Bappo. Bappo, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Sunny in London for a change, and about to embark on a great footballing journey with you over with this episode. So very, very happy.
We're going back in time a little bit, Bappo. So let me transport you, right? As we mentioned in the intro, this is the 17th of May, 2008. Of course, lots of listeners will remember PSG, or will think of PSG as perennial champions of Ligue 1, the French top division. But here on the 17th of May, they're in big, big trouble. It's the final game of the season. They've gone away to Sochaux, and they need a win at FC Sochaux to stay up. How is this possible? How can the club of the capital end up in such a mess? And how is it looking going into this final game of the season for PSG?
Well, it's been a mess for about 2 years by that stage. I think that's what we're going to appreciate over the next hour or so is PSG have entered a new era at the start of 2006-2007 season. They have been acquired by an American private equity firm called Colony Capital after more than 15 years of Canal Plus ownership. And needless to say, things haven't gone terribly right since then. So it's a big shock to the system in French football at that time. PSG and Canal Plus are sort of seen as one and the same in a way. And Canal Plus has been the TV channel that's driven the growth of French football through a lot more exposure in people's homes, driving the rivalry with Olympique de Marseille, and just being a very forward-looking, cultural, and impactful channel, really, because it also developed a lot of, you know, comedic talent, etc. So when they announce in 2006 that PSG is sold to Colony Capital, I think the overreaction from a lot of people is, who the hell are these people? And what are their intentions with Le Club de la Capitale, which is the jewel in the crown of Canal Plus? So we're taking a step back 2 years before that game, but I think we have to start there, really.
And it's interesting, of course, lots of people now are quite comfortable is the wrong word, but we know about private equity investment in football. I think there's been some studies actually recently that about it, you know, a third of clubs in Europe's top leagues have some kind of private equity investment. In probably the most high profile of that has been Clear Lake Capital, Todd Boehly at Chelsea. That has been less than a kind of stellar success. But I think at the time it was much rarer to see private equity invest in European football in this way. And I think that there was a bit of a sense of surprise, a sense of the unknown, at not only having American owners, but, you know, private equity is known as wanting to turn a profit relatively quickly. So even, you know, in some ways, Colony Capital, a little bit of a precursor for what European football has become a little bit. But it's fair to say that at the start, they struggle to get to grips with how to create a kind of really successful team on the pitch. But I don't know, because it's tempting to want to make the analogy with Clear Lake and with, you know, our American incompetence, you know, trying to come over here and apply their kind of American sports methods to European sport, which is very different. But it's fair to say that, you know, if Clearlake were taking over Chelsea, that was incredibly well run, the end of the Canal Plus era wasn't particularly successful either, right? With lots of difficulties on and off the pitch also. So Colonia inheriting already quite a difficult situation, but will plummet even further debts.
Very much so. They acquired distressed asset. I think that's the way to look at it. And that's the way they probably looked at it at the time. You know, PSG with Marseille was the club of the 90s in France, a perennial European contenders, a real powerhouse, even more so after Marseille got relegated for the Valenciennes affair. But they didn't necessarily win the title every year. Ligue 1, Division 1, as it was known at the time, was extremely competitive. You had clubs like Bordeaux and Monaco that we've talked about, the AG Auxerre surprise, etc. But I think it's fair to say that in the 90s, it is one of the two biggest clubs in the country, one of the most recognizable clubs in the country, and one of the most successful ones as well. And by the time you get to sort of 2003, 2004, Canal Plus as a group is starting to struggle a little bit more, and it becomes more of a distraction than their sort of main driver to get the Canal Plus brand out, I think is probably the way to look at it. And with the inflation of costs in football, actually Canal Plus cannot really keep up, and they don't really want to keep up, I think. So the last few years of Canal Plus at the helm of PSG are kind of marked by a slow decline. You know, PSG hitting mid-table isn't such an anomaly anymore. It doesn't invest as much as it previously did, and it has a lot more debts than before. So when Colony Capital acquire it, it's a club that's struggling, I think, not struggling to the extent of what we're about to see under Colony, but is not in a positive dynamic, let's put it that way. And I think that's probably why they're able to acquire it for 40 million euros, which, when you think about it, isn't that much for the only real recognizable football club in one of the main capitals in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I think what's interesting as well with that acquisition and the steps they take immediately after is that they don't take the Todd Bailey approach. Clearly, they take an approach of not trying to rock the boat too much. And so they bring in, you know, Alain Cézac as president. Alain Cézac had been part of the board of directors and had actually been a very minor shareholder for about, I think, 2% of the club for a long time, since the 80s. So they bring in somebody who understands the club, who's probably a fan, who's a recognizable name to fans, rather than the wholesale changes of bringing everybody from the outside and trying to really change the culture at the club. So I think that's an interesting, you know, step that they take in trying not to rock the boat too much. And they keep Guy Lacombe at the head of the first team at the start of 2006-2007, which goes terribly wrong. And then they bring in Paul Le Guen, who's an ex-PSG player, a bit of a legend of the PSG of the 90s, and still an up-and-coming manager despite his difficult time at Rangers, considering he'd won the title with Lyon some years before. So it's interesting to take a look back. I mean, 2006, you know, we're talking 18 years. A lot of things were different at the time. So there was a real defiance towards Colony Capital because people were unclear as to what their intentions were, and the American side of it and the private equity firm side of it, people were really concerned. But actually, their immediate first steps aren't so dramatic, I think, at the club. They're not here to sell all their assets. They're not here to change the complete organization of the club and toy with it. They're actually trying to stabilize the ship and maybe be quietly ambitious rather than making big declarations. But unfortunately for them,
it doesn't go so well.
It doesn't go so well.
Obviously, the season we look at, 2007-2008, is probably the nadir, where they nearly get relegated. But the previous season had already been pretty underwhelming. I mean, where do you want to start? Do you want to start about Vicage Dorasso going AWOL and clashing with his manager? Do you want to go to the sad scenes of PSG in Europe, where I think a fan gets assaulted killed. And killed against Israeli side Hapoel Tel Aviv? It's just a bit of a mess, with maybe just you know, the arrival of certain players from the academy is the only silver lining in what's a really difficult season.
I think if you look at their first season under Colony, which then that dynamic goes into that second season, 2007-2008 season, makes you kind of wonder what due diligence Colony Capital actually undertook, because it's a really unhealthy club on and off the pitch. So on the pitch, you have manager Guy Lacombe, who had done well at Sochaux, but is also known for being a straight talker, let's put it that way, has a particular style of management. Sometimes it works at bigger teams, bigger egos, maybe not. So the dressing room is quite divided. Vicage de Rasso is sacked, I think, month after scoring in the final of the Coupe de France and winning it for PSG. It's a really divided club, I think. And then off the pitch, like you've mentioned, there's racism in the stands, anti-Semitism in the stands. There's that horrible incident against Hapoel Tel Aviv. It's really a club that, when you take a step back now and you look at it again, but even at the time, the question on a lot of people's minds, I think, was, where is this going? Where are PSG headed? So you combine the uncertainty about the new owner's intentions with the real malaise at the club, with the divided dressing room, some youngsters, some old leaders who had failed, frankly, to lift the club, and it made a pretty potent, you know, potion really for the club, and it's that malaise that just kept going on. Le Guin arrives, tries to stabilize the ship, actually saves them, because again they don't need to win on the final day, but they're only assured of their another season in Ligue 1 at the end of match day 37 of the 2006-2007 seasons. And it was really uncomfortable, actually, PSG at that time. It was really, it was a distressed asset, but you didn't get a sense. I think that's the criticism towards Colony, is you didn't get a sense that they got to grips with how distressed it was before they took over and how it needed actually fundamental change to progress, and they didn't get to grips early enough.
And even that said, their second season, which culminates in this game at Sochaux, is very much a continuation, right? So you get a sense of these other players. Obviously, Paulita is a legendary PSG player. It's starting to slow down. Obviously, he's in his mid-30s by this point. Still scoring, but maybe contributing less to the team overall. Maybe becoming a bit more individualistic, but he has to know because the team is so poor. But what else is happening? So Mamadou Sakho, for example, that lots of listeners will recognize, becomes captain at 17 years old. I mean, this is in some ways stories that fans love to hear. Now, a kind of youth prospects that becomes a captain at 17, but also is probably a sign of the lack of leadership at the club fundamentally, that a young guy from the academy has to take over Le Brassard.
100%. I think, you know, after that initial first season, you look at their transfer market over the summer, and you know, PSG take the gamble of bringing in solid Ligue 1 players or upcoming players, and by that, you know, you look at Didier Digard joining from Le Havre in Ligue 2, but he was an under 21 international. Grégory Bourillon was a solid player from Rennes who a lot of people thought had potential and versatility. Zoumana Kamara was known as a solid Ligue 1 centre-back. You know, those kinds of players. And I think that the bet at the time is, let's just stabilise the ship with people who know what Ligue 1 is about, and we'll have those talented players who are already at the club, like the Paoletas, the Yepes, Sylvain Armand, Michael Landreau, Jérôme Roten. You know, those guys will get a bit of a nymph and will demonstrate their leadership. The problem is they had demonstrated no leadership over the last few seasons, and they didn't really manage to. I'm not going to say they didn't bother to, because you can't cast aspersions on individuals. If they're not leaders, they're not leaders. It's not necessarily their fault, but there was a huge leadership vacuum at the club on and off the pitch. I think Kizak was struggling as a president. Le Guen wasn't necessarily demonstrating, you know, great management ability, frankly. It was in a difficult context, but he wasn't also fundamentally changing the way they were playing. And the players themselves were struggling. So that, you know, that appointment of Mamadou Sakho as captain, that's a huge indictment as to everything that's going on at the club. And it also felt as though people were just washing their hands off of any sort of responsibility in a way. You know, it's, if you're Le Guen and you go, I look across my dressing room and the only person who can really inspire people and hold them accountable is this 17-year-old centre-back with barely any top-flight games, then that says a lot about what was going on, mm-hmm. on at that club and about people not wanting to hold themselves accountable.
Can I take you back to Bonal?
Ah, great. Also, great stadium, great historical club, so sure. So yes, please do.
Let's go through the PSG lineup on the day. So we have Landreau in goal, Seara, Yepes, Zoumana Camara, Sylvain Armand in defense, Clément Chantôme, Bourillon, Jérémy Clément, Jérôme Roten. Very French core. And then up front, Amara Diané and Paoletta is starting up front. Bernard Mendy will come on in the last 10 minutes to shut up shop and get a result. Mamadou Sakho also at the 86th. And then Piggy Louis Ndoula will also make an appearance. But in some ways that, you know, it is amazing. That's why we love sort of looking back on these sides before the kind of glitz and glamour of Qatari era PSG. It's nice to see these kind of Ligue 1 stalwarts. But it's fair to say, when you look at that side, maybe it's not totally inspiring, but it's not a team that you think should have been in a kind of relegation place, right? These are some really solid Ligue 1 players that are suddenly getting caught up, I think, by the negativity at PSG.
Absolutely. I personally am a big believer in dynamics playing a huge role at clubs. If it's a positive dynamic, you might not have the best players, you might not have the best setup, but there's an energy around the club that means that people are all going in the same direction, and actually it will work out more times than not. Conversely, if you look at a really negative dynamic, then it doesn't really matter the talent at your disposal. If there's negativity across the club, it's just going to bring you down more and more. And I think you also see it in, you know, in your professional life, right? If you've been a part of a team that has a lot of negativity around it, you don't produce to your best and you're mm-hmm. deeply unhappy. And I think that's what we had with PSG. I think if you look at their side, it's very functional at the time. There's really not a lot of creativity.
not a lot of pace, I have to say.
Not a lot of pace. There are people who are being overburdened and overtaxed in their role. So Jérôme Roten was the only sort of creative outlet. That's a lot of pressure for a guy who's barely scored any goals in his career and was really a wonderful crosser of the ball, but also quite unidimensional, frankly. There was little pace to help Paoletta, which he obviously needed in the final season of his career. Amara Diané was providing that, but that was it. And then you looked at players like Clément Chantôme, who was being asked to control midfield with Jérémy Clément, who joined not that long ago. It was a lot to ask for a lot of players. And I think, again, it kind of goes back to that leadership vacuum, right? I mean, you you look at that starting 11, there are some really experienced heads there. Mario Yepes won a title with Nantes. Mm-hmm. You know, was one of the most wanted centre-backs in the country for a long time because of his prowess. Sylvain Armand was meant to be a leader as well. Same for Michael Landreau. And, you know, the decision was made of let's be hard to beat and be functional rather than anything else. And they stumble, frankly, they stumble across the finish lines. And as we've talked about, the real hero isn't necessarily somebody who is meant to be the hero, right? He was, I wouldn't call him an afterthought, because he played a lot of games and scored a good amount of goals that season. But you weren't really looking at the start of the season of relying on Amara Diagne to get you out of the hole you've dug yourself.
Yeah, definitely not. And we opened this episode with the slightly tongue-in-cheek question about Amara Diagne being the most important player in PSG history, because he's the guy that really steps up on this particular game. So it's not Pauleta, who's playing his last Ligue 1 game for PSG. It's not maybe the bigger names like Roten, who had previously played in a UEFA Champions League final. You know, it's not a Mario Yepes header from a set piece. It's Amara Diagne who's really the star of the show today. So he scores after about 25 minutes, a really kind of neat finish from the inside right-hand side of the area, hard low across Teddy Richer. But then Sochaux equalize with about 20 minutes to go. And we think, oh no, could PSG be heading down? I think a pretty bad defending, a free header from what, about, I don't know, it was like 3 yards out?
Yeah. From a corner
and claim that, but never mind. But then an absolutely comical and crucial winner from Diagne with about, I don't know, 5-10 minutes to go, where he sort of just gets his stud on it almost. Teddy Richer and I think one of the center backs are sort of tumbling into each other, and the ball just trickles over the line in slow-mo. It just seems like such a fitting goal for this Berger side of an underwhelming Bracassé a little bit. But Amara Diagne, unlikely hero, had signed from Strasbourg, I think.
Yeah, it was probably just been relegated.
But was well prepared for the relegation fight to come. And was probably, I don't know, PSG's most useful attacking weapon that season. Ends up with double figures, I think, for goals in the season.
Yeah. 11 goals. And when you look at, bigger names at the club, Pauleta scores 8, of which I imagine a couple would have been penalties. Peggy Louindula, who'd had such a great end to the previous season in helping save PSG, only scores 5 in 31 and just doesn't have the same impact at all. And that's, that's pretty much it for goals. And for, as you said, for creativity, you're not really looking at anyone other than Jérôme Roten, who in the first place was already, frankly, quite limited, right? So it's, I think it also, for me, it's also, there are a few symbols there. One, which is Amara Diagne is the savior, and his second goal is all through effort and endeavor. That's symbolic of the side that was being put out by Le Guin at the time. And the other is, PSG struggling for goals just shows the decline, because for so long PSG were blessed with really technical players, and in the 90s they played with, in the 90s, early 2000s, they played with the likes of Okocha, Ronaldinho, but it wasn't, they always had a stable base behind those players, but they would let attacking players flourish. You know, there was always a sense that even when they were finishing mid-table, of let's go on the front foot and let's take the game to other teams. And I think they'd gone away from that. Whether that's because of Le Guin's tactics, I don't know, but whether that's because of a lack of investment. But I think that just showed why the club was also in decline. I think that was kind of a symbol, is you're relying on old players to conjure up some of the magic, as opposed to bringing in vigor, bringing in excitement to the club, and taking a gamble on players. And that was a real disappointment for me at the time, which was, you looked at PSG, there was nothing flamboyant about them. There was nothing that was making you dream about that club. And I get that the dynamic around the club was really negative, but still on the pitch, even in dire times previously, they would have conjured up something out of nothing, because they had at least 2 or 3 players who could do that, and they deviated from that.
Yeah, and one of the, I don't know, the puzzles in a way that I think we'll talk about at the end is, despite this team being so underwhelming on the pitch, frankly, because the football they produced wasn't particularly entertaining, and not really having big names, there's still a kind of nostalgia attached to this side. And if you, I don't know, knowing who Amara Diagne is, And what he did is almost a kind of test of where you stand as a kind of PSG fan. I'm trying to think of what an equivalent might be for, say, you know, Man City. You know, do you know King Clancy or Ali Benabia or, I don't know, one of Michael Ball? I'm not quite sure, but one of these kind of
what's the famous
legends that you would only know in from the more difficult times.
What's the famous on goal for Man City that actually takes them down to the third tier? Remember where the guy, is it Kevin Horlock? Something like that, where he kind of lifts the ball. He's tracking back towards his goal. He lifts the ball over the striker and then tries to head it back to his keeper, but just heads it past him. And it's it's a hilarious on goal, but also that might be a similar litmus test to fans. If you go to a fan now and you PSG fan now, keeping in mind it, we're talking 16 years ago, so you don't have to know all your club's history necessarily. So that might be an unfair question, but if you go to a PSG fan who claims to have loved the club forever, etc., and you mention Amar Hadiane and they don't know who that is, well, that's red a surprise. Flag. Yeah.
So the scenes at Sochaux, so PSG is celebrating, right? It's Paulita's last game, so he's got his shirt off. He's got a vest with sort of thank you for the PSG ultras. So they've just about managed to stay up. And of course, this being PSG, you know, even when they have absolutely terrible seasons, they somehow manage to get to cup finals. What is up with that also? No? I really remember this of PSG being absolutely dreadful during so much of this time, but somehow always getting to finals and even occasionally winning them. So it's an odd kind of, I don't know, Jekyll and Hyde complexion or an ability to just kind of turn it on for individual games.
I think it's that. I think it's the latter. It's just for those players, it's difficult in the league. They have a real Middlesbrough season, right? Middlesbrough 96 season or whatever it was, 95 maybe, or a bit later. A few of those players can't deliver on a weekly basis. I think, you know, it's not destroying his legacy to say that Paulita is in the final year of his career. It's more difficult than previously. Mm-hmm. He can't make something out of nothing as he used to, and he doesn't have the service behind him. But in one game in front of a Parc des Princes that's really buoyed up for it, you know, can he battle Father Time and deliver? I think that's what you sort of see in the cups is that you walk away from the morosity of your season and you've got something that you got to be able to play for. And that's what we see this season. They win the Coupe de la Ligue against Lens, who are actually relegated that season, who are the team who, if they don't beat Sochaux, will leapfrog over them most likely. And they get to the final of the Coupe de France, which they lose to Lyon, who are the real powerhouse, but by one goal. So it's a really, like you said, so a Jekyll and a Hyde season from them. But it's also, I think it's symptomatic of a club that is going through a lot of struggles. It's when you have no expectations in a cup and this is just a bonus, then people play more freely. People maybe give a little bit more effort without really meaning to. And in the league, it was just a constant slog with fans off the pitch being deeply unhappy. Dressing room that was difficult to manage. Some players were at the tail end of their career or were seeing their status diminish, you know, and some others were young and, you know, doe-eyed and just being thrown in at a deep end. It makes for a really difficult seasons, and that season was just so very peculiar.
One of the reasons we opened with the importance of Amar Hadiane is it's a question we had about whether this is a sliding doors moment for PSG, right? So, of course, this is speculative. What would have happened had Amara not scored with 10 minutes to go in this game, right? PSG go down. Maybe the Qatari acquisition doesn't happen. Now, of course, the Qatari acquisition comes a bit later, right? In 2011, 3 years actually after this season, which is actually one of the reasons I think probably not. I mean, had PSG gone down again, maybe Colony sell them, maybe they get acquired by, I don't know, some local French businessman. My feeling is that you know, no matter where PSG were in 2011, when QSI are looking for an investment into European sport, they look at the big cities in Europe. They look at the ones that have teams that are maybe slightly underperforming. And PSG, I think, would have still have been an attractive prospect. Now, of course, maybe if they were still in Ligue 2, maybe not, right? But my feeling is that it's just, in some ways, the potential is just so obvious, even when it's been so terribly mismanaged, that I think potentially that investment still happens. But it's an interesting hypothetical to play around with. I mean, where do you stand? What if PSG do go down that season? What do you think, I don't know, the future might have looked like for them?
I think the one big question with that is how long would Colony Capital have stuck it out, basically? Would they have been in a position of, look, this has been a terrible asset, terrible acquisition, I'm just cutting my losses and getting rid of it? You know, private equity firms are absolutely ruthless. And when they're when one of their assets is loss-making, they don't hesitate to sort of go, you know what, I'm cutting the funds, this is just how it is. So would they have let the club die? No, I don't think so. Absolutely not, because we're still an asset and it would have still sold. But I think it would have been interesting to see how long they would have really lasted and what kind of investment they would have made, because PSG in Ligue 2 is obviously still visible. It was the same for OM when they were in Ligue 2 after the Valenciennes affair. But it's still, you know, in Marseille, OM is a religion, right? In Paris, it's a bit less so, certainly for the people intramuros. I think it definitely matters a lot, and especially the traditional image is that it's people from the banlieue of Paris who really support the club. You know, that's where, you know, the youth of Paris really loves the club, etc. But it would have maybe been a challenge still for that club to attract, you know, 40,000 people in the Parc des Princes in Ligue 2. We've seen it at places like Strasbourg, where they managed to fill the stadium. But again, it's so much more implanted into the local fabric than PSG was at the time, I think. And nobody likes a loser. So, you know, there could have been a struggle. I think QSI would have still invested. And that's also because they were looking for a gateway, like you said. And you look at the people around there, you know, Nicolas Sarkozy, who was the French president at the time, was very keen to do business with Qatar. He's a famous PSG fan, a dedicated PSG fan for all his ills. and you know, the Colony Capital representative, who was the president of PSG at the time, Sébastien Bazin, from 2009 to 2011, since then, interestingly, has become the CEO of Accor Hotel, which is a big French company across the world, of which Nicolas Sarkozy became a board member. So you've always got those influences in those corridors of power that would have meant that it would have still been an attractive proposition for QSI. So on that, it's a long way of me saying, yes, I agree with you. I think it, in the short term after relegation, I think it would have been a really interesting and tough time for the club and for Colony Capital, because they would have looked at 2 years of investment and nothing coming out of it. And now to gather the interest and to recoup some of the losses would have been a little bit more difficult. So then those decisions are, do you invest even more to make sure that this is just a tiny blip, or do you cut your losses? I think that decision would have been a really interesting one at that moment in time.
Of course, it's always fun to look back at a time when...
Yeah. Yeah, so, but
Colony do get their act together a little bit in the subsequent seasons, right?
With some
more clever investment and kind of leadership players like Makelele, Julie, and things do get better, in the sense that when QSI then do their investment, they're in a much stronger place. You know, not quite challenging for titles, but yeah, not far off either. Close to,
and yeah, and they're close to Europe, right? I mean, they're relatively close to Europe when QSI acquires. I think that's also the what if kind of moment, is if they go down, their path to respectability takes inevitably a bit longer, I would assume. Because even if Colony Capital reinvested, you know, when you come back from Ligue 2 to Ligue 1, wonder what state the actual first team 11 is in and who you need to bring. And that, not sure they would have invested so much money to bring in those those types of players like the Nenes, etc., and being able to invest. So I think what I do genuinely think is they would have delayed the brand, basically. So, you know, when QSI acquired, PSG is still a famous club. Obviously, it's in Ligue 1. It's close to Europe. It's got some players, certainly in France, that are very recognizable. But it's also QSI straight away by Thiago Silva. They straight away get Leonardo would have come, but they straight away able to get the likes of Zlatan, etc. I just wonder whether that timeline would have been a bit delayed and what kind of players they would have brought in. And for building the PSG brand, which I think now, I think we both agree, is everywhere, frankly, is a really successful brand building exercise, because I walk around in London and I see people who are not necessarily French, I would imagine, because I've got the French radar. I know if people are French or not.
with a PSG shirt,
with a Jordan brand, etc. Yeah. And that comes from having invested in likes of Zlatan and then Neymar, obviously, and Mbappe. So that would have been an interesting brand building exercise for them to really develop the club and the club identity going forward.
The interesting thing, of course, is that, I mean, because private equity is sort of everywhere in football now. And that's one of the reasons I think we wanted to revisit this era, right? A time where private equity investment in football was rarer. But it does strike me, you'd think that one of the things that they'd really be able to take advantage of, right, is use that kind of US sports marketing excellence to really push the kind of football brands, make them cool or whatever. And actually, Colony Capital don't really do that with PSG. Now, admittedly, it's easier to do when you have Zlatan and Neymar than if you have Anna Radjane and Clément Chantôme, right, to kind of push the PSG. But I think about that a lot, you know, like the investments that they've been in Hertha Berlin, for example. I mean, now, of course, they've been terrible on the pitch, which doesn't help. But you'd think, okay, Berlin is such a cool city, you know, but you can't. I couldn't even tell you what the Hertha Berlin logo really looks like, right? Mm. I don't know. It's odd that what you'd think these private equity firms should be really good at, in practice, we haven't really seen, I don't know, so much of. And in France, obviously, there's been protests, right, with at least at Strasbourg and at Troyes. Yeah. I think those are the ones I'm aware of. I don't know if you're aware of any more. But it feels like French football fans are sort of, I don't know if they're fighting back private equity per se, but it's certainly this private equity and multi-club ownership.
Right? Yes. So
this sense of you're just being lower down in the pecking order. It's a little bit unclear to me whether the protest is private equity per se or more this multi-club aspect of it. I feel it's more the latter. Because fun for them, no one wants to be a feeder club in someone else's food chain, basically. But it strikes me that in French football and in German football, even more so, you're getting a big and successful pushback against these types of acquisitions, which really in English football is not the case. I mean, the only example I can think of there is, of course, the Super League protests that made clubs roll back. But I don't know, what do you think about the kind of French football fans' reactions to private equity involvement? And do you think it's just because those teams are doing badly, right? If they were doing better,
I think in France you have much more defiance towards capitalism than you have in the UK to start with. People don't accept the excesses of capitalism so readily in France as they do in the UK. I don't think that's an unfair statement. And so foreign ownership in particular is still relatively new in France. You don't have a lot of clubs who have been foreign owned over time, right? Even though you look at the two big clubs, you know, PSG, obviously, Colony Capital, and then QSI, Marseille, for a long time was Tapie, obviously French, but then you talk about Robert Louis Dreyfus, who's who's Belgian, but maybe there's a bit of a sense of proximity between the two countries. And since then, Frank McCourt, right? So I think for French football is, and I think we saw that with Colony Capital, is foreign investment and foreign investment for capitalism's sake, if I can put it that way, is not going to be well received. And I think at the moment with Troyes and Strasbourg, it is on top of that, the multi-club ownership piece. So if you don't recognize your club, you're clearly part of you're an affiliate in an international group to funnel all the assets towards the top head company. That's basically how it is at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at Troyes, whose record transfer remains Savio, who never played a game for them, was never going to play a game for them, and somehow ends up at Man City, I think says a lot, right? So it's that defiance. And I think it's also just the fear of what are these people's intentions for our clubs? And I think people wholeheartedly accept now that people invest money to make money out of a football club. And I struggle to understand the thinking behind that, really. How is that going to be a good investment for you? But if we go back to Colony Capital, I think they got saddled with PSG for longer than they wanted to. And I think that's why they didn't develop those elements that you mentioned, sort of the brand equity, you know, the image of the club. They didn't develop that because I think they bought it and they wanted to get rid of it within 2 to 3 years. They just realized after two seasons that nobody was going to pay the money they would have wanted to for the club. And when they sell it in 2011 for 130 million to Qatar, I don't know how much money they've basically made since the 40 million acquisition, because they spent within their means, but there have been ongoing costs, obviously, to running that sort of club.
Yeah.
But I think they also make the decision, if you know who the owner of Colony Capital is, who's Tom Barrack, who is a Republican mega donor for the Trump campaign and does a lot of business in the Middle East. I think he took the decision of, well, let's sell it, and this will open the doors for me going forward in that part of the world for further investment. So it's, you know, you got a sense even then, and that's why French fans were cautious about it. And that's, I think that's why they've been cautious about.
I think
what are the real intentions for wealthy people coming in to take over my club?
Yeah, it's always and I guess the sort of the investments in COVID make maybe a little bit more sense. Now you see these all these clubs needed an injection of capital. You see an opportunity there, you sort of go for it. But that's where the Colony Capital one is so interesting, right? Because it comes at a much earlier time in quite a different context. And as you say, you know, of course, lots of these football documentaries don't tell you so much, but I always remember that scene from Sunderland Till I Die, you know, where these quite successful businessmen, I don't know, get just carried away by the emotion of football and end up making sort of terrible, irrational decisions. I think constantly about that overpaying for Will Grigg, you know, and the thrill they feel about getting a transfer over the line and the giddiness of getting someone for the fans, which is exactly not how a kind of rational profit maximizing business should behave. And yeah, with Clear Lake and Chelsea, it feels like the same way. I know that they're there. You're sort of enjoying the, you know, the excitement of sports, the glamour of sports, when really if you're private equity, I don't know, that should not necessarily be your attitude towards it. So they do, I don't know. So I guess there are some successful examples, but it seems like such a risky investment, though, when you consider that your revenue is so dependent on, you know, on pretty marginal things, right? Can you make it into the Champions League or not? And your costs are really pretty fixed, right? And so much of it just goes to wages that of players that can be pretty hard to shift from one season to the next. But
yeah.
Anyway, so conclusion, if I was in private equity, I'm not sure I'd be buying FC Zurich or
and I think it's also interesting that when we talk about private equity in football, obviously Todd Bailey is one that comes to mind, but Todd Bailey is so much at the forefront of his private equity company that I, in a way, I don't really picture it as private equity. I picture it as this guy who has this massive ego, who spent this whole money to be really visible, to put his son in charge of whatever department, etc. If you look at Colony Capital, and actually if you look at Redbird, who's taken over Toulouse and AC Milan, they operate in a completely different way, and in a much more PE way, which is, it's very nebulous who owns the club. You don't really know who's making the decisions.
They
don't overspend. They don't throw money at the problem, but they're trying to find a way to keep their asset afloat and improve it just enough that people will be interested in buying it at a much more inflated price, right? Mm-hmm. And if you look at Colony Capital at PSG, they didn't throw money at the problem, clearly. They didn't underinvest because they were spending maybe 20 to 30 million euros every summer, which is not negligible in 2006, 2007. That's a decent amount of money. And if you look at Redbird, when they went to Toulouse and even at Milan, it's very data-driven, no crazy transfers. You know, you look at Toulouse, it was, let's bring in the ex, oh, his name is evading me now, the ex Liverpool and Tottenham, Damien Comolli in, bunch of data analysts. We buy Branko van den Boomen and Stijn Spierings. Yes. And De Jager, and we bring all those guys from whose value is either going to stay flat or going to go up. And I think they did the similar approach at Milan in a way. They were very constrained about their salary cap, etc. So, you know, I think we're seeing the excesses of private equity through Todd Bailey, you know, and the sovereign funds who are all promoting multi-club ownership and spending. But actually, Colony Capital's time at PSG wasn't one of overspending and making crazy promises. I think they were actually very, very cautious. It just happened to be that their first two seasons were terrible because they didn't because actually something they saw as a value, which was, we're not going to rock the boat and we're going to trust local people, didn't work out. And they changed tack slightly afterwards by bringing the likes of Julian Makelele and trying to clear out some of the deadwood at the club in a bit more of a rapid fashion.
One final reason we sort of wanted to revisit this this epoch is, despite the fact that PSG were obviously pretty terrible at this time, there does seem to be, I don't know, and we know, we both know PSG fans. I mean, so I grew up in Paris when I was younger and, yeah, sort of followed Paris loosely. But you do sense a kind of real nostalgia a little bit for this era of PSG. And if you mention a lot of these names, you know, Bernard Mendy, Amara Diané, you know, who else? Clément Chantôme. There seems to be, I don't know, real affection for this era of kind of a failure, to be honest. Where do you think that comes from? Is it a sense of, this was a time when we were promoting lots of youth from the academy, right? PSG are trying to move back into this direction, right? Recently, maybe move away from foreign stars, or at least, yeah, towards a more, you know, French Parisian team. Is it just, when you end up being super successful, you just miss being an underdog? And this was a time where maybe PSG could be considered that. But I do think you had mentioned this, and I think it's true, you know, that there's a real nostalgia around that time that seems odd and a bit misplaced. Yeah, where do you think it comes from?
I think it's a mixture of all those things. PSG feels very mechanical right now. It feels like this basic superpower, certainly in French football, where players don't really have to care or to play particularly well for them to win Ligue 1. And there's a rotating door of managers and players. And so I think when you put that, people feel a little less connected. And I think the whole, you know, all the stories about Mbappe and things like that and Neymar, it feels like a, you know, it feels like a, sitcom and opera around a lot of drama off the pitch, as opposed to you look back at the time and, you know, so some players who weren't really good and some youngsters and we were really struggling and there was a bit of more cohesion at the club and, you know, a bit more fusion with the fans. I mean, you're always going to have that when you look back. I mean, if you, you know, I remember knowing someone who's a big PSG fan at the time, I imagine still is. He wasn't enjoying those seasons. Nobody was. They were rubbish on the pitch. They were absolutely rubbish. And seeing Mamadou Sakho and Clément Chantôme wasn't making their heart go, yeah, that's great. They were just like, oh, okay, we're losing to Nantes like 3 minutes at half time or whatever it was. So I think for me, there's an element of inevitable nostalgia. And obviously you look at a time, like you said, when you were an underdog and things weren't going well and you managed to survive by the skin of your teeth, that's always more fun to remember that. But I think there's a real question now about how connected do people feel to something that feels more like a brand, and which is actually a general feel I get around football. I think maybe also as you age, you have less time for that kind of narrative going through the sport. I feel like at the moment at football, there's a lot of off the pitch stuff and a lot of pseudo rivalries and pseudo dynamics that are being built when they're not there. So I think for fans, it's that difficulty. I think for me, the interesting thing with that is people look back at it and say, oh, it was a more peaceful time. It was a more natural time. It was a more historical, real PSG time. It was a more innocent time. You were still the plaything of a foreign company that was interested in making profit. And even I would even go further back than this. And when people say, oh, you know what, the Canal Plus days were the best. Well, yeah, of course you had George Weah and you had Leonardo and Rai and all those wonderful players. You were still the plaything of a big French company that had acquired you for one big purpose. It was to drive their brand into people's homes, and doing that with PSG was going to be easier. And doing that with PSG and creating the rivalry out of nowhere with Marseille was going to drive revenue for Canal Plus. It was going to drive viewership. And Ligue 1 football was the big thing that Canal Plus was known for, aside from the comedy and filmmaking. So I just have a wry smile when I see and hear people being nostalgic about this era, because if you look at PSG as a club, over the last 30 years, it has been someone's plaything. And that someone had designs on the club that weren't wholly footballistic. And so that doesn't mean you don't build a history at the club, and that doesn't mean you're not allowed to be nostalgic about a particular era. I think if you put a little bit of context to everything, PSG has always been what it still is now, just Canal Plus on steroids, basically.
Yeah, that's a really nice way to conclude it. I mean, one question, obviously, because you're in Paris a bit more than I am, and maybe you have more of a sense of this, but do you know when United, for example, fans started to feel like they were being priced out, that it was becoming too commercial, too much of a brand rather than a football club? You know, there was the creation of FC United, of, you know, fans going to watch FC United rather than the Manchester United. Is there any sense of that from kind of, I don't know, the old school PSG fans that feel that maybe it's just become too much of a brand? Are people going to watch Red Star at all or funded new clubs? My impression is no. Like, I haven't really seen or heard about that, but maybe you're a little bit closer to it. So I was just wondering if there's... Is it more about reclaiming PSG itself rather than looking for new avenues to get that more kind of authentic football experience?
I think it's that. I think you've nailed it. It's reclaiming PSG. And that's because there are no other clubs in the Parisian regions, really. I mean, there's a Red Star, there's Paris FC. Yeah, Paris FC, there's the Versailles club that I think was in the third tier last year. But in people's imagination, it's been 40 years of PSG. You know, that is the club of the capital. And that's not going to change. That's not going to change anytime soon. And it's not the same. You're not going to see a Phoenix club rise. I think France isn't like that. But you're going to have people who are ultras, who are going to have banners at the stadium denouncing prices. That's the way. And this is the fickleness and the difficulty with being the fickleness of the football fan, but also the inherent difficulty of being a football fan is if you don't turn up to the club that you love to support them, a little bit part of you kind of dies, in all honesty. But at the same time, if you do turn up, you're by your actions, complicit. By putting money in and your time, you're complicit in it. I think it's really a difficult situation to be in. I don't have a solution for those fans. But, you know, at PSG, I think what you do here is it's a lot more expensive. And I know that for a fact, because even if you just want to buy a random ticket, you know, I don't know, PSG not, you know, on a Wednesday in March, it will be priced out for anyone. And that's the disconnect. The disconnect is, as it goes on, the early stages of euphoria of success start to die down as the expectations become different. Mm-hmm. So for now, if you're a PSG fan, you don't care about Liga. You care just about the Champions League, which is complete nonsense when you see where the club has come from. But you can't help be caught in that dynamic, because that's what the owners are looking for. That's what the investment is for.
Yeah.
And that's what creates a disconnect. And people just further and further just become detached from what should be the prime driver of the club, which is national league competition, in all honesty. That's what should make it the most fun. And that's that detachment right now.
Do you know if tickets at Le Havre are affordable? I'm in Normandy next weekend, so I might have to try.
You should try it. Stade Océan.
Yeah. Pretty iconic team, though, wouldn't you say? Le Havre. Anyway.
Yeah. Oldest club. Great shirt. Les Marines. And a town that's really had a lot of investment, has really rebuilt itself. So there's a talk about positive dynamics. Like, Le Havre has a real positive dynamic, and it's a historical club for French football, that's for sure. Le Doyen, the oldest club in French football.
Beppo, it's been a pleasure getting your insight on the good old days of PSG. Obviously, I think we've concluded that Amaradian is probably not the most important player in PSG history, but I don't think he should be forgotten. Beppo, it's been a pleasure. This has been Le Classique, and we've been revisiting PSG in the colonial capital days.